If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
A very good Erev Shabbos to you, and wonderful again to be with you. Spend some time, talk about things that are important. And as the world carries on its merry way of, well, some would call insanity, we turn to Torah for sanity. We turn to Torah for clarity. We turn to Torah to get some perspective on life, on the world, how to make choices, and how to make choices that really matter. Because in this world, ultimately, it's our choices which determine not only the direction in which we go, but our choices are, in fact, so powerful that it actually can change the direction in which the world goes. You know, we often think to ourselves, we are individuals, small people. What does one choice really matter? And the answer is that in the greater scheme of things, our choices are incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful because this is what God gave each and every one of us, the ability to choose, and He empowered those choices with such incredible divine energy, infinite energy. And this is why the individual choice of one person has the power to change the direction of the world. And because of that, the responsibility of making a correct choice becomes so much more important. Because after all, it's not only ourselves that in actual fact become the recipients of those choices, but in fact the entire world. And this is why we turn to Torah. Torah, which is truth. Torah, which is life. Torah, which is the eternal, infinite Word of God. And we have to look into Torah, to study the Torah, to understand the Torah, to hear the words of Hashem again and again and again, so that our minds become clear, our ability to choose correctly becomes clear, because so much depends on it. And this is a wonderful week. It's a wonderful Shabbos. The Shabbos has a name. The name, of course, is Shabbos Nachamu, the Shabbos of Consolation. Named, of course, after the Haftarah that we're going to read in Shul tomorrow from the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah is the prophet, well, the prophet of redemption, glorious redemption, Yeshayahu, redemption from God. But not only Nachamu, a double Nachamu. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, console, console, my people. And whenever we talk about the double, as we've often spoken about, double is not only twice as much. Double takes us into an entirely different dimension of numbers. It's not only that which we've lost and we're going to receive twice as much good. We go into, well, an entirely different dimension of good. We've gone through 3 weeks of mourning, the 3 weeks of, well, having to deal with churban, destruction, exile, losing the spirituality, God's home in Jerusalem, the Beit HaMikdash, not once but twice. And now we enter into the 7 weeks of Nechemta, of divine consolation. Not only twice as much of three, which would be six, but seven. We go into the stratosphere of multiplying the consolation and the goodness that comes. It's an important thing for us to know that. Because although, yes, we have to go through the difficulty of understanding the loss that we have experienced, it's important that we understand what happened then, what happens now during 3 weeks. 3 weeks is not an easy time. 3 weeks is not a time that we simply, well, look at the past and shed a tear or two. 3 weeks is a time that we have to come to terms with what Churban is all about. The Beit HaMikdash, the holy house of God, the center of the world, the purpose of God's creation, was destroyed by fire. What does fire do? fire reduces something to its basic elements. You take a piece of wood and burn it. It releases the moisture. It releases the gases. It releases the energy. It reduces, well, everything to ash. Basically, it takes something that was held together by God's blessing and it fragments it into its basic elements. This is what Churban is all about. We've often discussed it. Negativity is fragmentation. Instead of having something which is whole, instead of having something which is complete, instead of having elements that support each other, that bring about a composite that is useful and purposeful, it becomes fragmented. Everything pulls away from each other. There is no symbiotic association. Nothing really works together. What is redemption? What is redemption is unity. Unity is bringing together those fragmented portions and parts, making it whole again, making it real, making it interact in the most positive way. It becomes something which is not only whole, it becomes something which is incredibly useful. It becomes something which can fulfill the purpose of God's creation. Interestingly enough, this coming Monday is the great festival of the 15th of Av, Tu B'Av. And all those incredible joys that we experience on Tu B'Av all have to do with unity. And what is unity? Unity is the opposite of fragmentation, bringing elements together, whether through marriage, or whether the tribes interacting with each other, or whether the end of the punishment within the wilderness that those who lived there for 40 years had to perish because they couldn't enter the land. The people were now united, so they could go into the promised land. Unity. What is unity? Unity is the opposite of Churban, the opposite of destruction. This is what we celebrate now. This is Shiva Dinachemta, the 7 weeks of consolation. It's not only a pat on the back and say, well, with time everything will be fine. No, there is a powerful element of God's energy that he brings true consolation into the world, bringing together those shattered pieces and making them whole again, making the world whole again. What's wrong with the world? What's wrong with the world is that people are trying to tear it apart with all sorts of terrible ways, with bombs, with bullets, destruction, anger, all sorts of terrible ways. What do we have to do? We have to bring it together. This is what consolation is all about. These are the choices that we have to make. Our choices have to be directed toward creating unity within the world. We begin with unity within ourselves. Sometimes difficult, because after all, unity takes tremendous effort and energy. Unity of the mind, unity of the heart, unity of the soul and the body, unity within the home, unity within the community. Strife is easy. Conflict is easy. Unity takes effort. It takes humility. It takes the ability of recognizing the presence of another that sometimes we don't get along with. Even within oneself, we don't often get along with certain elements within ourselves, certain parts of ourselves that we don't like very much. We tend to ignore it. And yes, sometimes fight with it as well. Because after all, the human is a microcosm of the entire creation. We see everything in the world by looking into ourselves. This is what consolation is all about, working at creating a wholeness. Others try to create fragmentation, division, anger, battle. We try to create wholeness. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about, well, the incredible time of the year that we're in. 7 weeks where the opportunity of achieving great things is possible. 7 weeks of divine consolation. Consolation that removes negativity, that removes any type of pain and suffering. But as we look at the Parsha, we find something strange, somewhat troubling, somewhat confusing, something that needs clarification. The Parsha is Va'etchanan. Moshe is speaking to the Jewish people, as we explained last week. This is his great farewell speech. This is, well, the last time Moshe is speaking to the people. After he finishes the book of Deuteronomy, he will leave this physical world. Va'etchanan. He tells the people, I pleaded with God, I prayed to God to allow me to enter into the promised land. And in actual fact, our commentaries point out, Va'etchanan has the numerical value of 515, as we've pointed out a number of times. Moshe tells the people, I asked God, I implored God 515 times to allow me to enter the promised land. And each and every single time, God refused me. And in fact, the last time I asked God to allow me to come into the promised land, the Holy Land, God says, no. And don't continue to ask me. This subject is closed. It's troubling because, well, Moshe, who was Moshe? The most perfect of all people. A man of incredible, incredible greatness, achievements, led the Jewish people out of Egypt, brought down the Torah, led them across the Sea of Reeds. His accomplishments are just too many. If anyone deserved to, well, have his prayers listened to and acknowledged, it was Moshe. And Moshe pleads with God 515 times to be allowed to enter into the promised land. And God says no. And not only that, but he kind of indicates, don't talk to me about this anymore. What is this really all about? And we learn from this a number of things. First of all, why was Moshe so persistent? God said no, it's no. 515 times, Moshe should have learned after the first time, certainly after the 10th time, certainly after the 100th time, but 515 times, Moshe should have known what God's intention was. Why was Moshe so persistent in wanting to come into the promised land? And second of all, why did God say no? And perhaps most importantly, this was, well, in a sense, a private conversation between Moshe and God. What do we learn from it? Why does Moshe share this story with us? Why does the Torah share this story with us? What lesson can we learn from all of this? And it's an important lesson. Otherwise, Torah wouldn't tell us. The first thing we learn from this is that no is also an answer. You know, sometimes we think when we're told no, we're being, well, rejected. No. No is also an answer. It's not only an answer. At times, it's a powerful answer and a positive answer. And sometimes it's far more positive than a yes. When a parent tells a child who wants to go out on a Saturday night to a place they shouldn't be going, when a parent says no, that no is far more powerful than a yes and far more positive than a yes. Sometimes no is what's absolutely necessary and carries with it wisdom and blessing and greatness in every single area of life. Yes, we would like to hear yes at all times. But sometimes a yes is the worst possible thing that we could or should hear. Sometimes a no, a resounding no, is what's necessary. And the only way we can understand the no that God tells Moshe in this instance is by understanding why, in fact, Moshe wanted to go into the promised land. And then we'll understand God's no. Yes, there are commentaries that point out that Moshe wanted to come into the promised land in order to fulfill commandments that are only possible in the promised land. It goes far beyond that. As we always talk about when it comes to Moshe, first and foremost, Moshe was a leader in the fullest sense of the word. When we speak about Moshe as a Nasi, as a leader, it's a superlative term. He was the ultimate leader. He was the greatest leader in every sense of the word. This was his entire being. A leader who cared, a leader who protected his people in every single situation. This was Moshe's entire mission upon earth. To be a leader to his people, to protect them, to guide them, to lead them. This was Moshe. Moshe was concerned. The people are about to enter the promised land with a whole new set of challenges. He watched over them in the wilderness and he saw that at times they made terrible mistakes. And he had to use extraordinary powers of persuasion that they shouldn't be punished by God to the nth degree, which God wanted to do. And Moshe realizes that now a new generation of younger people are going into the promised land. And there will be a great many challenges, physical challenges, emotional challenges, more importantly, spiritual challenges. Will this new young generation have the strength and the fortitude to meet those challenges and to maintain their commitment to God, to Torah, to each other? And Moshe felt that as a leader, he should be there to continue his protection of the people and his guidance. Yes, of course, he had every single confidence in his protege, Joshua. He knew Joshua would do a great job as his successor. But still, he had this inner urge that perhaps he should be there as well. Because after all, he was the ultimate leader of the Jewish people. And he knew that there would be times that the Jewish people in the promised land would succumb to their weaknesses and they would fail. They wouldn't live up to their obligations. They wouldn't live up to their challenges. They would fail. And he saw there would be a time of Churban, of destruction, of losing a temple not once but twice, of exile. And who would care for his people in the fullest and most powerful way? That's what concerned him. And this is why he pleads with Hashem again and again and again, because he knew if he were to come into the promised land with the people, not only would that be the ultimate act of leadership, but the world would reach a stage of perfection. It would be like Mashiach had come. And God said, no, we're not ready for that. The world is not ready for that. The people aren't ready for that. They still have to go through a whole range of experiences in order for the world to be ready for that, in order for the Jewish people to be ready for that, in order for the Holy Land to be ready for that. And some of those experiences are painful experiences and difficult experiences. They have to go through the experiences of exile, perhaps not only once but twice. Not perhaps, definitely. They have to learn what exile is all about. They have to learn what destruction is all about. They have to learn what that type of loss is all about. The world has to learn, because that's part of the plan of creation in order to reach fulfillment. Wholeness is not something which was presented and that's the way it is. There is fragmentation, and the pieces have to be brought together again through tremendous effort and sometimes the confusion of exile, but the effort of the individual again and again and again. And if you are there, Moshe, they will never learn that lesson. It's important that they do. It's vital that they do. This is part of their journey. If you will come into the land, the journey will come to a glorious but an abrupt end. And the world is not ready for that. Creation is not ready for that. They are not ready for that. And that's why the answer was no. It seemed harsh, but it was a blessing in disguise. Because we reach maturity, we reach greatness, by not only going through challenges, but by sometimes failing to meet our challenges, by coming back and correcting those failings. This is what exile is all about. Hashem says what the Jewish people will accomplish in exile is sometimes far greater than what they will accomplish in situations of liberation and freedom. Exile is not only, God forbid, a punishment. It's an important teacher. It contains elements of tremendous benefit and spiritual treasure that sometimes situations of freedom and liberation do not possess. And if we take a look at history, if we take a look at Jewish history, we will see just that. No, we don't look for exile, but it's part of our experience. And the treasures that we have uncovered in the journey of exiles are great and powerful. The Babylonian Talmud, scholarship, tremendous, tremendous teachers, tremendous experiences of Mesirat Nefesh, of self-sacrifice, of greatness, all through the journeys of exile. Moshe says, now he understands. And although he desperately wanted to come into the promised land, but he realizes that the people had to go through that experience as well. And this is why at the end, he actually receives the no with a tremendous sense of inner joy. God says, yes, you will see the land from atop the mountain. You will see its entirety. But you'll also come to understand why they have to go through all the experiences, the joy and the hurt, the freedom and the exile, the destruction and the rebuilding. It's all part of what will make them a great people. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about Moshe. We're talking about the fact that he understands now, fully, that the answer that God says to him, no, you can't come into the land, is because the Jewish people have to go through the experiences, the ups and downs, the great moments, the difficult moments, the joyous moments, the moments of liberation, and the moments of destruction and exile as well. Each element is there to teach them something. Each element contains tremendous treasure, often, well, buried deep within them, but nonetheless they're there. So Moshe says, yes, but I'm going to give them the keys of how they will survive that incredibly, incredibly difficult journey, because a difficult journey it is. It's not going to be an easy one, because they will go through tumultuous times, difficult times. And this Parsha of Etchanan contains two things that gives us the ability and the strength to survive, and not only survive, but actually to thrive throughout all those experiences. Number one, the repetition of Aseret HaDibro, the Ten Commandments, and also it contains the Shema, both high points in Jewish life. Although one never speaks about the most important part of Torah, we have to admit the Ten Commandments are, in actual fact, a high point in Torah. The greatest moment in history, the Jewish people, all the Jewish people, stood at Sinai and received the Torah directly from God, the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments directly from God. And the Shema? The Shema is the ultimate prayer, something we say every single day, at least twice a day. The Ten Commandments represents Torah, study of Torah. The Shema represents prayer. This is what Moshe shares with the people in this week's Parsha. He says, the way you are going to, well, go through all those experiences, the roller coaster of Jewish history, is by remembering at all times two things. Stay committed to Torah. Stay committed to the study of Torah. Stay committed to the laws of Torah. Stay committed to the promise that you made at Sinai, that you will follow the will of God. The Torah is central to your lives. And this is why in each and every single generation, regardless of the challenges that you will face, if you will stay committed to Torah, Torah will give you tremendous rewards in return. Rewards of knowledge, rewards of spiritual greatness and insight. And this is why, as I mentioned before, sometimes within the darkest exiles came the greatest scholarship in Jewish history, the greatest knowledge in Jewish history. In exile situations, while we were away from the land, in difficult circumstances, the study of the giants of Torah and the Talmud, and the Kabbalistic and mystical teachings throughout history. And the second thing he says, remember the Shema, remember the prayer. And prayer is something which connects us with God on a personal level. God will be there for you, and he will listen directly to you on a personal level, even in the darkest, most difficult moments. He will not forsake you, God forbid, ever. You can reach out to him and he will respond. This is what prayer is all about. Tefillah in Hebrew means to connect. Tefillah is not prayer as we know it. Prayer is asking for a particular type of request. Tefillah means to connect. You can and should connect with God regardless of the situation that you're in. You might feel distant. You might feel unworthy. You might feel that you're lost in a sea of confusion, of chaos, of distortion, of hopelessness. Even in those difficult moments, you can and should reach out. This is what the Shema represents. Torah and Tefillah, the Ten Commandments, and the Shema are contained within one parsha to tell us how to go through the journey of what the Jewish people have to go through and did go through until the coming of Mashiach. This is the gift that Moshe says. I won't be with you physically in the experiences that you'll go through coming into the promised land and beyond, but I will give you the tools through which and by which you will go through those experiences successfully. And this is something which is so important for us to understand. They're there. We're not on our own. We weren't thrown into a sea of helplessness and treading water. We have the ability to do great things. And as I mentioned earlier on, the ability to make correct choices. And as we go through this parsha, you will see a great many important things that Moshe tells the people. How to come into the land, how to handle the land, how to deal with difficult situations within the land, how to recognize your strength and power and self-esteem and glorious nobility and know who you are and live up to it with a tremendous sense of purpose and greatness. Again and again he tells them that. And he doesn't tell them that simply to, well, make them feel good, because he's telling them the truth of what their identity is really all about, who they are and what they can be better and better and better each and every single day of their lives. So remember what I always say. First of all, you should be in shul tomorrow to hear this parsha. At Shabbos Nachmu, to hear that glorious Haftarah being read. Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. And how it ends. Raise your eyes to the heavens. Recognize who created you, who brought you into being. Develop that personal relationship with God. But listen to the parsha. Each and every single portion contains tremendous, tremendous words of wisdom. And as I always say, there's something there that talks to you personally. Try and hear it. Try and hear it. And when you do, it will resonate. You will hear something personal. You'll hear something great. You'll hear something important. You will hear something that will make a huge difference in your life. And you will be able to make incredibly important and wonderful choices. Have a beautiful Shabbos Nachmu. Good Shabbos.